Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Okay, we're off to a new section here, which is basically about the lymphatic system and DNA. And I've got our handout. This is the sectional outline. There you go. Extra. There you go. Special delivery. There you are. Sure. There you go. Keep in mind, these are online also. If you happen to lose track of them, they are on the website under sectional outlines. Basically, this time, I'll say that this particular section, you know what? I'm going to bring over this thingamabob too. Kind of nice, I can see better here. I can't see quite that far away anymore. and we'll forego taking roll today. Probably be out of here a little bit early this evening, so we'll see what happens. This is, as I say, it's a relatively short section. I think there's only 5 lectures in it versus like 9 we have last time, which is kind of good in some respects. Also, keep in mind the exam comes up more quickly, so stay up with this stuff. As I say, kind of a relatively short section, our shortest section. Also, in my opinion, by far the most interesting section. You'll see the, we started with the lymphatic system, which is what we'll do today. And this is basically just the structures of it. We'll talk about the structural aspects of the lymphatic system. And then we get to the biggie, human defenses. Very, very interesting. Really curious, unbelievable almost. And it is also the section of all of A&P that is most directly applicable to the medical field, particularly nursing. I mean, this is how we defend ourselves against a virus, bacteria, and so forth. Very direct medical applications. And as I say, in my opinion, really interesting. The last portion, DNA and RNA. And again, fantastic, really interesting, really curious, and it is what biology today is all about. The whole thing is down to the cellular level, and DNA is the crux of it. It also has huge medical applications. In years to come, 15, 20 years, hospitals will really be genetics labs dealing with DNA rather than what they do today. So it is the future of things, and again, to my opinion, a really interesting subject. We've touched on a little bit, actually. I keep talking about the fact there's DNA, messenger RNA goes out to a ribosome, makes a protein. This will be the details of that, and also in part of this will be the applications of it. Though we'll also be getting into the applications in Section 4 when we talk about biotechnology, which is the manipulation of DNA. But today, it is the lymphatic system. And again, as you see, the first section here is lymphatic structures. And I'll just talk a little about the functions of the lymphatic system and the structures, and we'll go on to a few definitions after that. Okay. First of all, functions of the lymphatic system. And I guess number one up there, and maybe number one altogether as far as we're concerned, is human defenses. This will be the majority of what we talk about relative to the lymphatic system, and it will be our focal point. It does two other things also, however, and actually both are quite important. One of the other things it does is it returns seepage from the blood system. Okay, we've got blood circulating around our arteries, veins, capillaries, all that sort of stuff. And as it circulates around the plasma, the liquid portion of it, about 10% of it seeps out and is not returned to the blood system. So there is seepage. And if this seepage continued and didn't make it back into the blood system, what would happen to you? You'd blow up, edema, you'd swell, and have extremely serious consequences accordingly. Well, as I say, one of the things that the lymphatic system does, it absorbs that seepage, and we'll see that a little later when we talk about the vessels. It basically has a system of vessels, and that seepage goes into those vessels and is returned to the blood circulatory system. And again, we'll go into the details of that in a little bit when we talk about those vessels. Is what? You know what? We had that. I guess they haven't replaced the bulb. If you want to kill, I think it helps. Is it hard to see is what you're saying there? Okay. Yeah, if you kill one of these lights, that one, there you go. Okay. Apparently these, I've asked now two or three times to have the bulb replaced on that. They keep informing me that the bulb costs about $450, which is true. So I don't know whether we're going to get that done this semester or not. But anyway, so but it certainly is clear. You can see it okay now, right? Third thing that it does is, and if you think back to digestion, you might have learned this, you probably did when you studied digestion, is your body absorbs these food products, which basically are carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. Two of the three go directly into the blood system. One of them does not, which is what? Fats. Okay, fats do not go directly into the blood system. Why not? Fats are lipids. Do fats, do lipids, and water mix? No, they don't. And that's the problem. So therefore, they are absorbed originally from the small intestines. They are absorbed into the lymphatic system, into the vessels of the lymphatic system. There, they get coated with protein, so the fat isn't sitting right out there. And when they're coated with protein, you got a lipid coated with protein. What do we call those? Real common, people talk about it all the time from a health standpoint, a lipoprotein, of which there's low density, medium density, and high density. And hopefully you did talk about that maybe during digestion and are familiar with the implications of those things and how you get those three different types of things. But anyway, this coating process is done in the lymphatic system. And then this material, first of all, the seepage from the blood and the fats are then put into the blood system. They work their way up and go into the blood system. And again, we'll take a look at it later, but I'll mention right now, they re-enter the blood system through the left and right subclavian veins. So these are interconnected. The lymphatic system connects into the blood system, returning the seepage and putting the fats in for circulation through the left and right subclavian veins. And we'll take a look at that when we talk about veins here in a little bit. Okay, so it does those, as I mentioned, our focal point, however, we're not going to talk much about those. That's almost about it of what we're going to talk about those. For the most part, the focal point here will be the defensive systems, and that'll be the majority of these lectures. But for the moment, we'll discuss basically the structures of the lymphatic system. And I'm going to take these from the least structured or least complex to the most structured or most complex. So we're going to start out in an area. And again, these things are listed on the outline I gave you. And there it says structures, and the order of events here, the order of that from simple to complex or from least structured to most structured are, here's the names, diffuse tissue. We're going to go through each one individually, but diffuse tissue, dense tissue, tonsils, lymphatic vessels, lymph nodes, the spleen, and the thymus. Okay? So we'll start out with diffuse tissue. Here's a picture that's showing structures. It's the picture out of the book showing structures of the lymphatic system. But one thing you don't see here is you don't see diffuse tissue, because diffuse tissue is actually the white blood cells that can be found anywhere in the body. How many kinds of white blood cells are there? Five of them, there they are, okay, white blood cells. And these white blood cells, all of them, can from time to time be found anywhere in the body. They can be found in the blood system. They can be found in the lymphatic system. They can be found in the interstitial tissues. They can, from time to time, be found anywhere. And that's what is called diffuse tissue. It's the distribution, the random distribution of these white blood cells. Diffuse because it's diffuse. It's all over the place. White blood cells that are shown up there, as far as diffuse tissue go, what makes it up, these cells that are found all over, are these five different types, are neutrophils, basophils, eosinophils, monocytes, and lymphocytes. They're basically, when we talk about diffuse tissue, we say they're all over the place. There are no clear boundaries. Now we can say for diffuse tissue, yeah, there's no clear boundaries. They can be found anywhere. However, they tend to be found more frequently, these white blood cells, under mucous membranes, common spot, can be anywhere, but a little more common under mucous membranes, around and within lymph nodes. And we'll talk about what lymph nodes are here in a little bit. And within the spleen. And again, we'll talk about the spleen in a little bit. So that's diffuse tissue. Next category is dense tissue.
The previous line of
sure.
Before the white blood cell.
The lymphatic system. Are you looking at diffuse tissue there? No, it's just cells that can be found anywhere. This is just, actually, that's just a, the listing there is the same listing on the sectional outline. That is just the structures that we are about to cover. And again, shown on the outline that I just gave you also. So you don't necessarily have to copy it down, okay? At this point. And we're going to go through them one by one. Okay, dense tissue, which is dense collections of what? Diffuse tissue, right? Okay, so these white blood cells in certain areas get together in a dense fashion instead of being loosely distributed, and it is called dense tissue. Here, this picture here shows diffuse tissue here, more organized, more collected into a single area, that is dense tissue. It is also, as is obvious by this, also can be called lymph nodules. Now, that's not lymph nodes, that's lymph nodules. Dense tissue is also called lymph nodules. And again, as it says here, a concentration of diffuse tissue. And again, these can be found in a wide variety of places, but are particularly located in the loose, connective tissue of the digestive system. Commonplace to find this dense tissue or lymph nodules. In the respiratory system, and in the urinary system. Okay, also, I should mention the tonsils, because that's our next subject here. And again, the next more organized level of lymphatic structures are tonsils, which are collections of dense tissue. So they all get together in a more organized way. So you could say it says large groups or collections of lymph nodules or dense tissue, they both mean the same thing. They are found in three areas. These are organized groups of dense tissue and can be found in three specific areas. And there are three types of tonsils or three structures relating to tonsils. One of them right up here is the pharyngeal tonsils, which is located, this patch of dense tissue is located in the nasopharynx. Where's the nasopharynx? Back of the throat, between the nose, between the nasal cavity and oral cavity. Back of the throat, between the nasal cavity and oral cavity, nasopharynx, a patch there, the pharyngeal tonsils. These are also called, I don't see them called that much anymore, but can also be called and were called at one time very commonly adenoids. And these, years ago, they don't do it much anymore, but years ago it was very common to do tonsillectomies, to take out tonsils when they became enlarged. And the most common one to be taken out, you can take out any of them, but the most common one to be taken out was the adenoids or pharyngeal tonsils. Basically, they were taken out if they became enlarged, and if you kind of repetitively had, if they repetitively became enlarged or infected, it was common to take them out. They don't do it much anymore because this was a major level of protection from infection. Basically, the job of these tonsils are to protect against infection. Basically, what happens, they're under a mucous membrane. A piece of foreign material comes in, you breathe it in, and actually, we're going to watch a video that shows this, but a piece of foreign material comes in, gets stuck in the mucus layer. It's kind of gooey. And the tonsils, being made of these white blood cells, what they do is they phagocytize the foreign material. They take it in, endocytosis, digest it, get rid of it. That is their purpose. In doing that, they also become enlarged. And it used to be, and I don't know whether it was financially oriented, but whenever they became enlarged, first thing you do, take them out. That was not a very good idea, because when they're taken out, you no longer have that defense for the rest of your life. So, therefore, it's very rare that they do that today. They're supposed to get enlarged. Not quite sure what they were concerned about. Maybe that it cut off your breathing, but you could always breathe through your mouth or something. But anyway, because after the infection's over, they go back to the normal size and again do what they're supposed to do. Another one on both sides of the oral cavity are the palatine tonsils. And again, both sides of the oral cavity in back, here and here. At the back of the oral cavity, on both sides, we find the palatine tonsils. The third grouping here is at the back of the tongue, and that is the lingual tonsils. Now, the location of this certainly was selectively advantageous. There's a reason for it. Is notice your they form kind of a circle by which back of the throat, sides the back of the oral cavity, back of the tongue, basically air coming through the nose or through the mouth is going to hit or go past one of these groupings, one of these tonsils. And by far, the number one route of infection is the respiratory route. In other words, when you get infected, for the most part, the greatest source of infection is through respiration. Therefore, this kind of has it covered. The idea here, if you breathe through your nose, it gets stuck up here, gets destroyed. Breathe through the mouth, gets stuck here, gets destroyed. It's hard to get by for material to get by this. It's kind of difficult. Notice, as air's coming in your nose, it's heading towards the back. It's going to hit the back of your throat, and it's going to hit that pharyngeal tonsil. Okay, so that is the deal with tonsils. Next level of organization, next structure, are the lymphatic vessels. Shown in this, and again, as I say, this is the picture of the book. Shown in this is all these green lines all over the place here. It is a system of circulation. These are vessels, very much like capillaries. They're a single cell layer thick. They carry a fluid within them. And the fluid, what's the fluid they carry? It's pretty simple. Lymph fluid. You can call it lymph fluid or just lymph. The lymph that's in them is mostly water. However, there are also substances, certainly the fatty material, the things we talked about, taking in fats. So we'll find fats in there. And they are being coated with protein to make lipoproteins. And actually, that's what gives the lymph fluid kind of a milky white appearance, the fats that are contained in it. It also has materials like proteins and things that you would find in blood plasma because it is picking up that plasma and again returning it to the blood circulatory system. Now they have one thing very much in common with veins. As I say, these are structurally like capillaries. But one thing that is in common with veins is they have one-way valves. And the purpose of the one-way valves is exactly the same as it was in the blood circulatory veins, in veins. Does anybody remember what that was? Why did they have one-way valves? To forward movement, that's an interesting way to put it, a kind of upward movement, but the movement of the fluid in there is facilitated by these one-way valves. Because something they have in common also is there's really, in the lymphatic system, no pressure whatsoever. There's no heart, there's no pump, so therefore there is no pressure on this fluid caused by anything internal in the system. Veins have very little pressure, if any, because the original pressure comes from the heart, but by the time it's made it through the capillaries, there's very little pressure left. So material fluid, which is down here in either system, is going to have a hard time making it back to the heart or making it up through the lymphatic system. So one-way valves, you kind of have the fluid down here, then it's here, then it's here, then it's here, then it's here, and it doesn't drop back because the one-way valves hold it. What is it in both systems if I say, okay, it's going up? Well, there must be something, some force pushing it up to get to the next level of the one-way valves. What is that pressure? What is it that causes the fluid to move altogether? Did you say skeletal muscles? Yep, that's it, skeletal muscles. Basically, the idea is that as you walk, as you move, you contract your skeletal muscles, like the thigh muscles. It pushes on these vessels, whether they be veins or lymphatic vessels, pushes the fluid along, can't go the other way, can't go down because of the one-way valves, so it goes up, gets trapped there, goes up, gets trapped there, and makes its way back via that. This is why, in a hospital, you're laying in bed, you feel terrible, you can't move. Nurse comes in and says, you got to get up and walk around. You can't just say, oh, I'm not walking, I don't feel, nope, you got to walk around a little bit, because stasis of the blood or lymphatic fluid and the swelling and edema that it causes can be a real serious problem. So you have to move around in order to move the fluid to where it's supposed to go. Okay, now we are taking a look at a bunch of lymph vessels here, all these green lines, and you'll see intersecting these green lines as it's working its way along, all these little dots here. There's a green dot here, 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 here. These are lymph nodes. And they are all throughout these lymph vessels. In other words, the vessel comes up, goes through a lymph node, then the vessel leaves, goes through another lymph node, goes up a little further to another lymph node, and so forth. So these lymph nodes intersect the lymph vessels. And the fluid, as it moves upward, will pass through a wide variety or a number of these lymph nodes. The basic idea, before we get to lymph nodes here, the basic idea is that material, foreign material, something, an infectious agent, bacteria, for example. Let's say you get a cut in your leg, and bacteria get in there, and they start to multiply. At some point, they are going to be picked up. They are going to be picked up by a lymphatic vessel. They will make their way into a lymphatic vessel. And they are going to work their way up this direction. They're going to work their way upward. And as they go through these lymph nodes, these structures, which are filters for the lymph, it will filter out the foreign material. The lymph nodes are packed with white blood cells. And again, for example, bacteria, they'll eat it, digest it, get rid of it. So the idea is to run it through these filter beds. You know, you got foreign material? Okay. And we'll take a look at how that works in a minute. The other thing, as I said, as the fluid works its way up, is to return, we talked about returning fluid that had leaked out of the blood circulatory system. And we talked about putting fats, putting a coating, making them lipoproteins, and putting that into the blood system. All these vessels lead up here, up here, up here, and so forth, and do enter the blood circulatory system at the left and right subclavian vein. Not shown in this picture here, but left and right subclavian veins are approximately here and here. So basically all the material comes along, goes through these filter beds, works its way up here, and enters the blood system. Which brings us to lymph nodes. So what is a lymph node all about? Okay, here's the little circular structure like we're seeing there. This is a lymph node. It has a capsule around it, connective tissue to protect them. And you'll notice it is divided into little pie-shaped chambers, or what's inside are these little pie-shaped chambers, here, 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 here. The dividing wall, what divides them into these little chambers, is actually an extension of the capsule. You can see the capsule going all the way around here, and the capsule, same connective tissue, goes inward to make these regions where these cavities are, where these openings are. We can't call, even though it's the same material, same connective tissue, we can't call it a capsule if it's not surrounding the item. So therefore, the name given to these dividing walls, which are really an extension of the capsule, are called trabecula. It's written right there. As I say, the whole function of a lymph node is to filter the lymph, to get the to filter it the foreign material that might be found within the system itself. And basically, the idea is that the fluid comes in through afferent lymphatic vessels, afferent going in, just like we talked about in the nervous system, afferent in. Fluid goes in here, gets filtered, and the clean material, the fluid once it has been cleaned, leaves via efferent vessels. Afferent in, efferent out, just like it was, same names we used when we talked about the nervous system, about neurons and nerves. Now, if this is going to filter that fluid, what do we use to filter things? So you got your home, you got a furnace. What filters the air in that case? What does a filter use? What's in there? A mesh of fibers, right? Exactly, a mesh of fibers. That's what's in these cavities here. Is a meshwork of fibers. They are called reticular fibers. And they are found for the most part, another bit of structural information here, the outer region, shown by these dark circles here, this outer region is again the cortex of the lymph node. And the center area, therefore, is the what? Is the medulla, okay? And in both areas, we find reticular fibers. This is denser out here and is even referred to as dense lymphatic tissue. These collections of what? Of diffuse tissue, which are white blood cells. So within all these fibers, showing all these fibers here, within the fibers are millions of white blood cells. And the idea being, foreign material comes in, it goes through these fibers, this meshwork of fibers, reticular fibers, gets found by these white blood cells, gets eaten, digested, get rid of it, and the clean fluid goes out again, the efferent vessel. Okay, next structure. I'm going to mention one other thing here. I got it written here, so I'll mention it. Is of the five different types of white blood cells. There can be all types found within a lymph node. That's true. But by far, the majority are the lymphocytes and monocytes. For the most part. White blood cells found within the lymph nodes, all strewn all over within these reticular fibers, are lymphocytes and monocytes of those types we talked about before. Next structure, the spleen. Very similar in what it does. It is supposed to filter a fluid, and is the idea is to filter the foreign material. Also does one other thing I'll talk about. What fluid did the lymph node filter? It was lymph. Lymph fluid or just lymph? The spleen does exactly the same thing for blood. The idea is to filter blood for foreign material. Is basically the idea of it. Same idea here. Blood goes in through the splenic artery. Gets filtered. And then the clean blood comes out via the splenic vein. So it basically is a cleaning system, a filter for blood. And it's the same idea. You've got an artery going in. It's going to break down to arterioles, going to break down to capillaries where the activity actually occurs. Standard circulatory situation there. And within the spleen, there's two regions. There's two areas. These capillaries are going to run through two different areas. They're going to run through this area shown like right here. These are capillaries, descriptive of capillaries here. This area right here, which appears in this picture white, is called the white pulp. And again, we'll find capillaries in this area out here also, in this area that appears red. And in this area which is red, which is called the red pulp. So within there, in these capillaries, we've got two regions. One which is white, called white pulp. One which is red, called red pulp. Now in the white pulp, capillaries, you've got the blood flowing through there. It is again packed with monocytes, with white blood cells. And it does just what we talked about before, just what I said before. It is going to filter the blood for foreign material. If there's something foreign, something that's not part of you in the blood, it gets trapped by the white blood cells, gets eaten, digested, get rid of it. You know what? This is not one of the best pictures I've ever seen of this. Actually, I think the picture in the last book, in the edition before this, I think was better. If you happen to have that, it might be clear. But basically, as the arteries go in, it goes and it breaks down. It goes through the white pulp first. In other words, it'll go through the area of the white pulp, and then and it's kind of more centrally located, if that's what you're asking. And the red pulp kind of surrounds that. And then it goes, and again, breaks down and then goes through the red pulp. Is that what you were asking? Maybe you have a better picture of it. Anyway, that is the idea. Actually, in the other picture, if you saw this, it would be sort of like coming in, breaking down, and an area of, if this were the entire spleen, an area, that picture is weird, but an area of white here, and an area of red out here. I think it shows that shows more the overall distribution of this material. White pulp kind of in the middle, red kind of surrounding it around the outside. Okay, the red pulp, so you've got the capillaries going through the red pulp now, and it basically also does the same thing just said. It traps, it's packed with white blood cells. It gets rid of foreign material, takes it in, digests it, phagocytosis, and gets rid of it. But in the red pulp, one other thing happens also. It's kind of why it's red, actually, is that it destroys old red blood cells. After 2 or 3 weeks, red blood cells kind of get pooped out. They don't do such a good job anymore. And they get phagocytized by a category of monocyte called a macrophage. It is a monocyte, but it's a really big one, called a macrophage. Macro meaning what? Big. Phage meaning what? To eat. A big eater. Okay? But it is packed with, in the red pulp you find it's packed with macrophages, which take in, endocytosis, take in old red blood cells, tear them apart, and actually redistribute some of the material. The iron in it is then free to go make more red blood cells, Where, okay, that's where they get destroyed. Where do they get made? Where do red blood cells get made? In the bone marrow, right, in bone marrow. So that is the life, that is the life of a red blood cell, an erythrocyte. Okay, and as I say, once all that process is done, again, foreign material destroyed in white pulp, foreign material and red blood cells destroyed in a red pulp, the cleaned blood goes out the splenic vein. Okay, last of these structures is the thymus. And we talked about the thymus before, right? Yeah, we talked about the endocrine system to begin with. And I'm not going to go into again exactly, it was, we talked about before, located in the mediastinal area, showing it here, kind of adjacent to the heart. We talked about it had two lobes. But basically, all I'm going to say right now, and this is relative to the human defenses, major function of it, this is where T cells mature. It's a T cells. T cells mature in the thymus. It is somewhat structurally, a little bit internally, like a lymph node. It has a capsule around it. It is divided into chambers by trabecula. It does have an outer region, which is denser, called the cortex, and an inner region, which is the medulla, within those chambers. But it does not have the fibers. In other words, it is just tissue. It is not a filter bed. It is a place where T cells mature, so it does not have the fibers.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love.